Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court, Zachary Myers for the appellant. I'd like to briefly address one of our sentencing arguments. My client was sentenced to 293 months of imprisonment for a single attempt to transport currency. In comparison, on page 46 of my initial brief, I laid out the offense conduct of his co-defendants, all of whom dealt with drugs directly and many of whom managed others in the conspiracy. Under the sentencing guidelines, a defendant who is less culpable than most other participants in a conspiracy is entitled to a two-point reduction in their overall offense level. I'd argue that the facts establish in this case that Cruz was substantially less culpable than the average participant in the activity, and I think that the government's suggestion that there should be a bright-line rule that couriers can't receive a minor role reduction is in conflict with the statement in the guidelines requiring comparison to the other participants in that actual activity. I think that it's a case-by-case test that the district court has to engage in, and I think that in this case, with only a single transaction, as the government admitted, and without any contact with drugs or managing other people, that my client was entitled to the reduction and that failure to grant it was an error. If there are no questions about sentencing,
because the only person that's come close to him is this John Smith at 266 months, right?
That's correct, Your Honor, although he was facing a statutory life sentence. And since then, an additional co-defendant, I think, has also been sentenced to a lengthy sentence. But their offense conduct was easily distinguishable from my client's. And moving into the speedy trial arguments.
And am I correct that the PSR also recommended that he receive the minor participant reduction?
That's correct, Your Honor. Now, as we argue, Cruz was prejudiced by the delay in bringing him to trial, primarily due to the problems that he had with his memory of the events in his testimony, which were attacked both in cross-examination and in the closing by the government, as to his recollection of specific dates and times and places for events that happened 21 months previously. Cruz had informed, before the court granted the last continuance, he had informed the district court of his right, or of his assertion of his speedy trial rights, and no action had been taken. His counsel's request for that final continuance was in conflict with the information he had provided to the court and to his counsel, and the court should not have credited his counsel's assertions, given them further investigation, considering that his counsel had previously made untrue representations of fact to the district court, as the district court had noted. In the 18 months between arraignment and trial, there was never a hearing with Cruz or his counsel present before the court, finding that the final continuance, that the ends of justice in granting the continuance outweighed the public and the defendant's interest in a speedy trial. I think the statutory requirement of finding, the statutorily required findings weren't met.
But am I correct that your argument based on the Speedy Trial Act you first raised in your reply brief?
In the
main brief, it was a constitutional argument. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. In the government's brief, the government argued that the Speedy Trial Act was, in fact, not violated. In response, we reevaluated his claim, decided that it was, in fact, meritorious, and decided to bring it in response to the government's argument. And in relation to his statutory and constitutional claims, the pro se motions, our position is that the pro se motions were sufficient to preserve his claims under the circumstances when his counsel was frustrating his requests that were known to the court and known to the government, and that courts in other circuits have found that a pro se, or that a representative defendant moving pro se to assert their speedy trial rights can effectively preserve their speedy trial rights under the Act and under the Constitution for appellate review. I would also point out that the final continuance, which, you know, as I've said, doesn't meet the specific factual findings needed by the statute, or required by the statute, the final continuance was also for 110 days, in response to a co-defendant's request for 60 days and counsel's assertion that he would be in the midst of a two-week trial, and that the length of that continuance is not justified by either party's motion, and, you know, again, the ends of justice aren't met by a continuance of that length given these circumstances.
Is that it?
If there's no questions, I'd reserve my time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Myers. Ms. Kanur?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I am Melanie Konauer, representing the United States of America on appeal. The allegation that the defendant has made this morning in regard to a bright-line rule being proposed by the government that no courier ever gets a roll reduction is not supported by the record and is inaccurate.
Well, here there were 9 or 10 cocaine transactions that Mascoro brokered between Milo and Alex, and Sins was the only involved in one, and his role was to transport the money, albeit he thought it was $500,000.
It was originally to be approximately $500,000 until law enforcement intervened. The top three members of this organization are fugitives. One of those, he's only known as Alex, is the one who was most directly connected to Mr. Sines, and his correct and true identity is still not known. And since those top three have not been brought to justice, we do not know what their sentences will be.
Right, and this John Smith, tell me about him. He got 266 months. What was his role? Because Sins is the top of the chain at 293 months, at least as things stand now.
Mr. Smith, I'm sorry, I was not trial counsel. Excuse me. I do know that of those individuals who have been sentenced to date, which includes Mr. Fierro, who received a sentence of 324 months, there were widely different situations for each of the defendants. Mr. Mascaro, Mr. Delgado, Mr. Dews apparently all received 5K1s for substantial assistance. They accepted responsibility. They did not obstruct justice, all of which are unique to Mr. Sines. In addition, Mr. Sines' criminal history is such that, as pointed out at sentencing, but for a few months here and there and not having probation revoked when he committed additional crimes, but simply having it dismissed, he would have been a career offender looking at 360 months to life imprisonment, all of which the court took into consideration in regard to the sentence that she imposed. Six of the defendants in this case were safety valve eligible, which also accounts for a great discrepancy or difference in the sentences that were imposed among these defendants, six of whom, are still fugitives. So to try to pick out any other particular defendant and say his sentence was different does the trial court a disservice in that the trial court was looking at this individual, the overall scheme, and what his role was, what he did, what were the appropriate guidelines, and then fashion a reasonable sentence to Mr. Sines. In that regard, the role that the court found for Mr. Sines was not a low-level courier. He was entrusted with approximately $500,000. The effect of losing the U.S. dollars can be tremendous on a drug trafficking organization. It's not simply replaceable product. It's the end result. The activity was not, as the court noted, a simple incidental to an activity he was already engaged in. He made 2 trips to Indiana to accomplish this, completely out of his normal route of travel, although at trial he claimed he'd only made 1 trip, and that was on the way back from Boston. We know from the telephone calls He was there earlier to pick up that money. We know from the series of telephone calls that he was in direct contact with Mascaro, who was the primary distributor in Indiana, who was giving the money over, and with Alex, the as-yet unidentified supplier, because the phone calls, are scheduled like within a 20-minute window of Mr. Alex calling Mr. Mascaro, talking with him, saying he would have his buddy call to pick up the money. That is when Mr. Sines made that first call to Mr. Mascaro. We didn't have Mr. Sines' phone tapped, but we had Mr. Mascaro's phone tapped, and that is how we know the series of events.
But is this trip, was this his only criminal activity, or was he part of a larger gang? Or?
We have no way of knowing all of his involvement. We only have that little window when we were involved in tapping Mr. Mascaro's telephone.
So it is possible that this was just a one-time thing for him?
It is possible. It is unlikely that an unknown individual is going to be trusted with $500,000.
It's a bit of a jump, though, to go from the fact that only a trusted person would be given the $500,000 to the conclusion that he was involved on a continuing basis with these people, isn't it? And did the judge make that leap? It does. I mean, there could be other bases for trusting a person besides that he's part of your gang, right?
Of course, you're right, Your Honor. The judge looked not only to his being trusted with this amount of money, but that he was willing to go so far out of his way, hundreds of miles, that he could be called upon to do that, to take that upon himself, to do that, to make two trips.
That sounds like just a courier, right?
A courier with connections to the very supplier of cocaine. In this case, 28 kilos of cocaine were seized. On two occasions, $500,000 were seized. That's not someone who was simply going across the street to make a delivery or just holding something long enough to make a delivery. It is the connection to the top of this organization, Mr. Alex, that makes his role so substantial, that he could not be deemed by the trial court to be substantially less culpable than the average participant.
Other than the testimony about this journey and the pickup, did any of these defendants who got the 5K1 departures for cooperating testify about his role, Sin's role?
I believe only Mr. Mascaro testified as a cooperating defendant. Because this organization was split between the Southern District of Texas, the Northern and Southern Districts of Ohio, and the Southern District of Indiana, that was removed so people did not studiously have identifiable information in regard to who was doing what. So there, that information was not there.
That wasn't available.
But I'm still puzzled. So the judge says he was much more than a courier. I don't know exactly what that means. What did he do besides just, transporting the money?
I don't know that the district court judge was saying that he had other activities.
Well,
because
if
we
you
simply
say
don't have
that someone is much more than a courier, mm-hmm. it sounds as if he's doing some other things besides just carrying the money or the drugs, doesn't it?
Well, among the things that one would note was his studious attempt to not provide any information, to not be able or refuse to give information about his co-defendants. And this court has noted on other occasions that the role of a studiously ignorant courier is essential to the organization. And that is certainly the role that Mr. Sines was playing in this particular organization, changing his story several times, and his knowledge of the amount of money wasn't simply assumed. It was put on the receipt, an unknown amount of money. But Mr. Sines knew exactly how much money it was and made the statement that he had lost the $500,000. So he was not a flunky, if you will, but someone who was well-versed enough to be studiously ignorant, to not divulge, and to keep that secrecy as long as he possibly could.
Well, he just didn't cooperate.
He did not cooperate, but he also obstructed justice.
How are we to know that this is other than a over-the-road truck driver offered $5,000 to make one trip?
That was certainly not his testimony.
What testimony do we have?
I'm sorry?
What testimony to set this apart from a one-time courier with, in my hypothetical, taking $5,000, knowing it's drug money, and whatever, just a courier?
This is a courier who set his own route, who made first one trip to Indiana, had conversations between both the supplier of the cash and the supplier of the drugs. When that was not successful, he had no problem. He would go on, take care of some other business, and then he arranged the second time with conversations between these people.
When you say take other business, you mean he was an over-the-road truck driver?
That's my understanding.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, his principal occupation, I assume, is in the range of making $75,000 to $100,000 a year as an over-the-road truck driver. Right. So, I mean, that he went on to do his business. I guess I want to see whether this is a full-time courier who just has a front of being a long-haul driver, or whether, in fact, he is anything other than, not to be admired, somebody who takes a significant amount of money to carry an enormous amount of money, and knowing that it's an illegal proceeds.
The pre-sentence investigation did not indicate that Mr. Sines was legitimately making the kind of money that the court has indicated.
Well, I'm just making a guesstimate of what an over-the-road truck driver has. But, you know, I don't know whether he owned his own rig or not. You know, it's not so clear to me.
There is no indication in the pre-sentence investigation liabilities and assets section that Mr. Sines had legitimate income equal to owning his own rig or having the kind of income that would indicate that he had something other than some illegitimate income.
The government indicated
Mr. Sines' testimony was that he was only getting to get $750 for making this trip and another $750 for buying a truck for someone else, which is not a large carrot to offer someone, if it were true, to carry this kind of money and take this kind of risk.
Now, he was the only one who went to trial, right?
He is the only one who went to trial. Mm-hmm. So he had no acceptance of responsibility reduction.
Mm-hmm. And he would have, but for this finding, he would have been, his mandatory minimum would have been 240 months?
Yes. And as was argued at sentencing, his criminal history was significantly understated.
Yeah, but the court, looking at, perhaps I missed it, talked about that as a factor as to why the sentence was so high? I didn't see that.
The court looked
to.
It was argued by the government as to his criminal history. The court, I think, took a good look at all of the 3553A factors as well as the guideline factors, and this was at the top of the guideline sentence.
But what I'm asking about is a specific finding that his criminal history was unrepresented, and so this was a factor that the court took into account for increasing the sentence.
There was no finding that his criminal history was understated, no, Your Honor. But I'm stating that that is a factor that was brought to the court's attention.
Oh, I understand that. You're saying it was argued, but yes. It was not something that the court in the final sentencing statement gave.
No, she did not make
it. So the main reason, at least as I glean the court statement, is because it was more than, she thought his role was greater than just the single delivery.
I believe she thought that his role was more than being substantially less than an average participant, which is the role reduction burden of the defendant. The court did not find that he was substantially less involved or essential.
What was the longest sentence given out?
324 months to Mr. Fierro at this point in time.
What was his role?
He, I believe, was one of the individuals on the supply side. The top three have yet to be.
And what was the extent of his role? Because you mentioned him earlier. He had just been sentenced. His sentence was not included in the brief. So he's just been sentenced. What was his
role? He received a role enhancement. I do not know how many levels, but I do know that he received a role enhancement.
And what was his role?
I believe that he was on the supply side.
I understand that, but I mean, how on the supply side? Was he someone who was a big supplier, and so, you know, he dealt lots of kilos with them?
I believe he was orchestrating some of the distribution from supplier to individuals such as Mr. Mascaro in Indiana. It takes a lot of organization to get cocaine from Mexico into the United States and then
You really think 24 and a half years is an appropriate sentence for a courier?
Mm-hmm.
I must say, it sounds kind of bizarre to me.
Mr. Sines was in a position of spending a lifetime in crime. Mr. Sines has never taken responsibility for his criminal activities.
And now you're going into other things that the judge wasn't considering, as far as we know.
I believe that the court looked at
all
of those things.
No, you mustn't say that. She seems to have thought that I think what she meant when she said he was more than a courier is he was more than the garden variety mule.
Yes.
He knew more, and it was a long trip, and he exercised some discretion in arranging things and concealing and so on. So he's a super mule in terms of sophistication, but not actually in terms of amount of activity. So it seems like a really long sentence for a courier. And your other person who got the 325 months, which is not that far away from the 293 that he got, seems to have been, you know, a principal, which is very different from someone who's hired for one haul. So I'm troubled by that. I don't know why it just seems too high.
I think there are lots of factors that go into it, including a willingness to obstruct justice by committing perjury during trial.
That's a separate, a separate enhancement. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But the big thing that seems to have influenced the judge was, as I say, his sort of quality as a courier. He's still a courier, even if he's a sophisticated courier.
And I think the court's entitled to consider what kind of courier, how essential is that courier? How much control does the courier have over how he does things? Not all couriers are the same. And I think that that's why if a courier is just a courier, it doesn't mean that he isn't essential. And it doesn't mean that he isn't ordinary.
Who's the other fellow who got the 325 months?
Mr. Fierro got 324 months. Fierro.
Fierro got the 324 months?
Yes.
But you say he's sort of a middleman. You said he orchestrated the supply of drugs.
That's my recollection.
He wasn't the actual supplier.
There were multiple suppliers, and none of them have been brought to justice.
So look, if this fellow gets 293 months, what's the proper sentence for someone who is actually a large supplier of drugs? Will you pull his fingernails out or what? I mean, isn't there... If you jack up the sentences of the low level of the couriers up to, you know, like 25 years in prison, what's left? So if you're going to go into the drug business, you say, well, I don't want to be a courier. I want to be a major supplier, because if I'm caught, if I'm a courier, I get 25 years. If I'm a major supplier, maybe I get 35 years, right? But at least I'll make a lot of money.
If the sentence were based only on one thing, that
you keep coming back to that.
But I
say, if this guy is sophisticated, he's going to say to him that his future counterparts are going to say, look, if you're a courier, you get the same sentence as someone who's a major supplier. So I'm going to be a major supplier. I'm not going to play around with this courier business.
And here we don't have a situation where he was asking for the minimal role adjustment, which is clearly covers people who are the least culpable. And he didn't fall into that category. This was for a minor participant, which, according to the application notes, is a participant who is less culpable than most of the other participants, but whose role could not be described as minimal. And some of these people who got the 5K1 departure, they were substantial players, weren't they?
I'm sure they were.
They were intimately involved. There were more deliveries and all that kind of thing. And if they had not gotten their 5K1s, they would have been at much higher levels. But you said you weren't trial counsel, so you can't say where they would have been.
That is correct.
But we can assume that, because some of the ones that you mentioned were cooperating, is this like this Manuel Mascoro, a.k.a. Pedro, and if he's a 5K1, he got 144. So we can assume he must have been pretty high up in the food chain if 144 was what he got for cooperating. So I assume he had a big hit, took a big hit in terms of sentencing. So I'm, you know, just when you look at the range and when you look at where everybody is, it just seems out of proportion where this guy ends up sins.
There are lots of factors, such as the 5K1, that go into where someone ultimately resides within the sentencing guidelines advisory chart. Mr. Mascaro, as you know, testified at trial at length. He provided active assistance to the government that resulted...
Oh, and that's what I'm saying. I'm saying with all that he did, he ended up at 144 months. So
correct.
His role was pretty substantial because he's got 12 years.
Absolutely.
So I'm just saying,
absolutely.
I understand that. But so if his sentence was cut in half, that would be 300 months. 300 months is just 7 months less than Sin got for his one delivery. I don't know, because neither of us, we're both speculating. So maybe he only got a third reduction off of his sentences, so maybe his sentence is more like, I don't know, 220 or 230 or something.
Because his criminal history may have been different. He may have been in a wholly different category.
Right.
And it's unusual for anyone in the Southern District of Indiana to get a 50% reduction on a 5K1, at least on government recommendation.
Sin's mandatory was 240.
Yes.
So he was already looking at 20 years.
Yes. Knowing that his mandatory minimum was already 240.
Right.
His role aside, we also have the other factors that go into his ultimate sentence. As the court discussed,
years for a courier should be adequate.
And those other factors you keep referencing, when you look at what the record is, what the court said, the court doesn't make specific findings on that.
She does in regard to obstruction of justice.
Well, obstruction, yes. But on the other factors that you've argued here, those are not in her sentencing statement.
No. She listened and resolved her sentencing issues upon the record that she made.
And treat your arguments as part of her decision, mm-hmm. as you keep doing.
I'm sorry?
You keep insinuating that arguments that you make that she doesn't mention are nevertheless part of her decision.
Mm-hmm.
That's not proper.
I base that only upon Judge
Barker. You should not do that.
Routinely.
Because then you could make a zillion arguments, she ignores most of them, and then you defend the appeal on the basis that, oh, well, you know, she listened, So maybe she was persuaded by us, even though she didn't say anything. That's not right.
I believe that the decision was based on the factors that she found, that he was not substantially less culpable.
Then why do you keep mentioning the arguments you made that she didn't refer to?
I'm talking about the obstruction of justice, the criminal history category.
You argued to her about this, you know, that his criminal history was undercounted, and you say she listened to you. And the implication is that she gave weight to an argument that you made, even though she didn't make the mention your argument.
I did not intend to convey that, Your Honor. I only meant to convey that the court listened to everything and made her own determination of the reasonable sentence, utilizing both 3553A factors and the guidelines.
Ms. Gunner, in that criminal history, were there drug-related offenses in there?
At least one of them was, because he was subject to the 240 mandatory minimum as a result of a filing of an information under Section 851. The criminal history was varied. There was many, many times where violations of probation were filed, and some of those were pending when he committed other crimes. Therefore, instead of violating the probation earlier, they simply dismissed it. Had they not, he would have been a career offender.
What were the nature of the other criminal activity, if you recall? If not,
there were theft offenses, and I'm sorry, I can't recall them all off the top of my head. They are in the criminal history section of the pre-sentence investigation. They were not consistent. They were many different types. Everything from drug trafficking to theft.
And the drug trafficking, you said there was one drug trafficking?
I know that there was at least one drug trafficking felony.
Conviction.
For, like, distribution or possession? Do you recall what that was?
That I don't recall.
I'm just trying to get the nature of who this individual was, who was able to get employment at this Southwest freight line. Right.
Maybe they didn't do much of a criminal history check.
Not, one never knows their due diligence. So I thought perhaps you could. But thank you.
And I know that I'm out of time. Would the court like me to address either the obstruction finding or the speedy trial argument?
I don't think so.
No.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Conower. So, Mr. Myers, do you have anything further?
Yes.
As the court has noted, Cruz indeed has received the third highest sentence to date in this prosecution. Mr. Fierro, as indicated in the indictment, was responsible for obtaining and distributing large multi-kilogram quantities of cocaine from Mexico to Indianapolis. And John Smith, who received the 360-month sentence, had been engaged as a courier for many, many transactions and had several prior transactions involving large quantities of drugs and money with Mr. Mascoro.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, because I want to ask about the 5K1 people, but finish that.
Mr. Mascoro, who was the prime witness against my client at trial, was the head of the cocaine distribution conspiracy in Indianapolis, managing many multiple kilogram transactions.
And he's the one that got 144 months?
Yes, he is. And he, in his testimony against my client, he testified that he had never heard of my client before the call that my client made to him, that he had never done business with my client previously, as opposed to the other individuals in the transaction who he was able to identify all of them by name and face. And indicated in his testimony that he had dealt with them previously.
And what about this Sergio Leon Moreno? He ended up with 135. I assume he was a 5K1. I believe she said that.
Everyone in this conspiracy other than my client was a 5K1. And Sergio Leon Moreno transported cocaine from El Paso to Indianapolis and drug proceeds from Indianapolis to El Paso.
How often?
And he was on more than one occasion. And according to the indictment, to which he pled guilty, and I believe Mr. Moreno is eligible for deportation at the conclusion of his sentence.
Fierro, he pled guilty, correct? He got the 324.
Recently, yes.
And what about this Pedro Mendoza Tocayo? He got 97 months. What was his role?
Pedro Mendoza assisted Mascoro by helping offload cocaine shipments that arrived in Indianapolis and weighing and packaging cocaine for distribution and counting drug proceeds.
And so this was more than one time, I assume.
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. And as in answer to Judge Posner's question to the government, there is no evidence of any involvement of Cruz in this conspiracy other than this transaction. The government admitted as much in their closing argument and in the sentencing.
Now, what about Roberto Espinosa, who got 78 months? What did he do?
Roberto Espinosa transported cocaine from El Paso to Indianapolis and drug proceeds from Indianapolis to El Paso. Roberto Espinosa, along with several of the other defendants, was a long-haul truck driver who engaged in repeated transactions with the conspiracy under the direction of Mr. Mascoro and his lieutenants. As the court...
And what about this Ramiro Gonzalez, who got 8 days?
I believe Ramiro Gonzalez was safety valve eligible. While he did also offload cocaine shipments and package cocaine, I don't think he traveled on behalf of the conspiracy, and I don't believe he had any criminal history, and I think the prosecution decided not to seek significant jail time for him.
And did we cover Quentin Dews?
Quentin Dews was a major cocaine distributor in the Cincinnati area who obtained his cocaine from Mascoro.
And when you say major, give us some flavor of what you mean.
In relation to Mascoro, engaged in all the transactions of Mascoro moving cocaine, most of them were to Dews and Dews' organization in Cincinnati. So eight to ten transactions involving 10 to 20 kilograms, mm-hmm. of which has been proven by the government.
And he, too, was a 5K1.
Everyone was a 5K1 except my client, Your Honor.
What was his sentence?
Mr. Dew's sentence?
204 months.
That sounds correct. I'd have to look.
204 months and 5 years supervised release.
Yes, Your Honor. Turning briefly to my client's criminal history, my client does, in fact, have one prior drug felony. In 1991, he was convicted in Texas of illegal investment.
And is that what gave him the 240-month minimum?
That is what doubled his mandatory minimum sentence. For that conviction, which was a felony in Texas, he received no time in prison and only probation.
What was the crime?
Illegal investment, which under the Texas code is a felony and is drug-related.
What does that mean, illegal investment?
My understanding of it in my review of the Texas code and the few documents available from that old charge is that he was present and may have been knowledgeable of and pled guilty to being knowledgeable of a drug transaction taking place.
Do we have any idea of the nature of the transaction from your investigation or the extent?
From the record, no, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Myers, I want to ask you a question, and I'm not seeking information with regard to any conversation you might have had.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did you talk to the counsel who represented in preparation for this case?
I've had brief conversations with Mr. Ramos, Your Honor.
All right.
I represented Mr. Sands at sentencing. Mr. Ramos withdrew after trial.
Yeah, I recognize in May he withdrew, and I just wondered whether there was contact because he's located where?
Mr. Ramos is located in El Paso, Texas, and in fact did not travel to Indianapolis until March of 2009 on behest of the district court and did not appear in Indianapolis again until trial. Throughout that entire period, my client was incarcerated in Indianapolis.
And let me ask you this. With respect to other counsel mentioned probation violations and other criminal, can you give us shed some light on that?
He has several, which we hashed out in sentencing, and it's in the sentencing transcript. He has several prior arrests for which he received jail sentences of less than a year or sentences of probation. There were times when he failed to report timely for probation or failed to completely make restitution, and I think there was more than one instance where he might have tested dirty on probation, and yet the probation office supervising him exercised his discretion and decided not to revoke and not to send him back to prison based on the knowledge of him in those circumstances. Excuse me?
Mr. Myers, what was his legitimate work record?
The PSR indicates that Cruz was indeed employed legitimately throughout this time. He was, in fact, a long-haul truck driver, I think making in the neighborhood of $43,000 a year. There's no indication of any assets out of line with the line of work that he was legitimately engaged in. He had also worked in his family's bar and restaurant and had worked in construction and in car sales prior to that.
And in terms of these other arrests, these were not felonies, just... Was it just as one drug felony?
Only one of them was a drug felony. I believe another one of the prior charges, which was bodily harm to a child, it was an incident involving his daughter that at sentencing, although the district court didn't specifically credit it or not credit it, and his daughter did submit a letter, saying that the court was inaccurate in finding my client guilty in that offense, but they were not. There was the incident with his daughter. There was an incident of theft for selling stolen jeans that someone had sold to him, and the illegal investment arrest. And there was another minor offense and he was arrested for being in possession of a couple of counterfeit $100 bills. Mm-hmm. So I would, as I did at sentencing, make contention with the government's argument, which I realize isn't properly raised here, that the criminal history overstates his past. I would, in fact, say the opposite.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Myers. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, we were, Your Honor.
And we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client, and we thank Ms. Conower also.